Rockline, the show where you ask the questions for the biggest stars in rock and roll. Hi, I'm Gino Michelini, your guest host tonight for Rockline, brought to you in part by Budweiser, the king of beers. I'm sitting in tonight for BC, Bob Coburn, who's homesick right now with a bad case of the flu. And we hope you're feeling better, Bob. But I'm real glad to be here because we've got a very special show for you tonight as we spend the full 90 minutes with Bono and Adam Clayton of U2. And as always, we have plenty of phone lines, but just one number to remember nationwide. And that number to dial is toll-free, 1-800-222-ROCK. That's 1-800-222-7625. So give us a call. We'd love to hear from you tonight. You know, following the success of their 1983 album, War, U2 did anything but play it safe when it came to recording their next studio project. They changed producers, going from longtime associate Steve Lillywhite to the production team of Brian Eno and Danielle Lenoir, and they also chose to record in a castle rather than their usual studio setting of Windmill Lane in Dublin. The result of this change is The Unforgettable Fire, an album that reaffirms the fact that U2 is one of the most genuine acts to emerge in the 80s. From U2, Rockline welcomes lead vocalist Bono. Hi. It's nice to meet you.
Yes.
Jumped up on you there.
It's nice to meet you also.
And bassist Adam Clayton. Sure. Hello,
what,
Adam.
What can you say after such an intro, Gino? Hi, nice to be here.
That was pretty nice, wasn't it?
Oh, it was great.
You guys are worth it. You got a great band. Now, speaking of great stuff, last night the show at Long Beach was a hot one, and it was the last in the brief two-week tour of the U.S. The obvious question is, what are your plans for next year? How much are we going to see you?
It's only really the beginning for you two, though. I mean, we're coming back in the springtime, and we're going to be here for a few months. I mean, this was really just a chance for us to get to know the material and the people again.
Well, we've always had a fairly kind of legendary time whenever we've played L.A. I don't know if you remember the Palladium show a couple of years ago where the stage was invaded, and then we had the sports arena, which was a bit crazy as well. So it was nice to sort of continue in that theme of strange shows in L.A.
Well, you guys are playing this time through pretty much medium halls. Isn't it getting a bit difficult to play those size halls from now on?
They tell us we're not supplying the demand, but I don't know. We just wanted to start off, you know, in 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 seaters, just because we just felt it was too predictable to come in and play the large arenas. And since then, we've realized that we make big music and it can fill the biggest of spaces or places. So I'm not afraid of these big bad tin boxes, and we're going to come back and we'll turn them into little small tin boxes.
Okay, we're going to be taking calls from all over the country. We're live and nationwide with you two. The number to call is 1-800-222-ROCK. Right now, let's kick it off with Pride and Name of Love from U2. From the great Unforgettable Fire LP, that's Pride in the Name of Love from U2. And we'll be talking with them and taking your calls. There's lots more music from U2. And your calls for Adam and Bono on Rockline coming up. The number to call is 1-800-822-ROCK. It's toll-free, and we will continue in a moment on the Global Satellite Network. It's Rockline. We're back with Rockline, live and nationwide. I'm Gino Michelini, sitting in for Bob Coburn with my guests, Bono and Adam of U2. To talk to them, call us now. The number is 1-800-222-ROCK. And we've got plenty of calls. Let's go to them right now. In Indiana, we've got Ann listening on WMET 95.5 in Chicago. Ann, are you there?
Yes.
What's your question?
I would like to ask Bono, what inspired you the most about Martin Luther King to write your song?
Well, let me see now. Where can I begin? I think my interest in Martin Luther King and what he'd done here and the peace movement in the 60s began whilst considering the problems in Northern Ireland, in my own country, because, you know, we're an Irish band, and even though I don't live in Belfast, and though the band live in Dublin, we see that in the border there are people being torn in two by whatever they call it, religion and politics. And I just felt, well, in the 60s over here, when the race relations weren't too good in the U.S., here was a man, Martin Luther King, who was brave enough not to kill for his cause, but if it came to a die for it, which he did, and it was tragic. But that's where my interest came from, trying to figure out what would it have been like if Martin Luther King had lived in Belfast, if there was such a man in our country. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes, it does. Well, I also want to say I saw you twice in Chicago, and you guys just give so much strength that it's really great. And I'd just like to say God bless and keep it up.
Well, thank you.
Anne, could I ask you a question? It's Adam here.
Yes.
How much emphasis is put on Martin Luther King in schools here?
Not much. I basically learned about him in church, and I read about him on my own.
And why do you think not much importance is given to him here?
I think because he was sort of a rebel. And I think...
But a nice rebel, surely.
Yeah, and I think that's not easily accepted.
He had a dream.
I think he was probably too good for most people. What's happened?
Anne, did we answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on right now to Providence, Rhode Island, listening on 94HJY. We've got Anne Marie. Anne Marie, hello?
Hi.
Say hello to you too.
Hi.
Hello.
I was wondering, Bono, how come all the words to your songs aren't printed on the album?
Right. Is there any way out of the studio now? Right. Well, I'm tied down here, so I suppose I'm going to have to face up to this question. It's a very good question. Well, the reason is simply, Marie, that I never wrote the lyrics down in the first place. They were never written, ever. So I never put them on the record. A lot of the words to the music that we make are written on the microphone. And I've said before that, you know, when, you know, sometimes when a writer puts a pen in his hand, that's when he starts losing it, you know, because often when I'm on the microphone, I find out things about myself that I didn't even know were there. And it's through improvisation, if you like. And the words then become a part of the rhythm of the music. They become a part of the mood of the music. And to separate them and put them on print, I think would actually misplace them, and so I chose not to. And I know that there's been, you know, some people have said, well, how are we to work out the words? Well, they took a long time coming out of me. I'm sure they'll take a long time sinking into the people out there, but I think that's maybe the way it should be. I really feel that, you know, even in Japan, where people don't speak English, they still get the sense and the meaning through the mood, not just through the actual, the fine print, if you like. Does that answer your question?
That is. It's great. And you were great in Worcester this month.
Oh, you're from Worcester?
Yeah, I went to the concert.
Oh, good. I was there as well. As you know, I mean, Boston and all the people there have just been so good to us over the years, and that was a real celebration, that event. Thank you.
Ready to take another call?
Yeah, let's move on. We're here.
Let's move on
to the whole world, if we could.
Hello, world. Yeah, Tucson, Arizona. We're going to go to Sue, who's listening on KWFM. Sue, are you there?
Yes, I am. It's really wonderful to finally talk with you.
Sorry. Donna,
I heard that after the World Tour, you were considering breaking up U2 because some of the fans weren't getting the true meaning of the music. Is this true?
Well, I think, you know, the way we approach, you know, the band and the breaking up of the band U2 is we do it every day. Every day we break up the band, we form it again with the same name and the same people. Because you can't look back and you can't look forward. You got to just live in the present. And you're right, sometimes you feel like a song like Sunday Bloody Sunday, which is a song about peace in our time, in our country, in Ireland, if it's misinterpreted as a rebel song, that can be, you know, you go home and you wonder if it's all worth it. But generally, I think the majority of our audience, we're very proud of the people that come to see you too, and the people that we talk to, not just on the phone now, but the people who write us letters and stuff. And I think that people do, in the majority, know what we're on about. I think there are a few that misinterpret it, but that's okay too. You just got to live with that. I'm sure you understand what we're talking about, don't you?
Sue, is that all right? Did you get your answer?
Yes, I did. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas.
Where are you from, by the way?
Tucson, Arizona. Well, I'm not originally from here. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Well, we hope to be there in the springtime, I think, down there in Arizona. So we'll maybe see you then.
Sue, thank you for calling. Let's tell you what, let's take a quick break here and play some U2 music. We've got on the Sony compact disc New Year's Day. This sounds
good. Wish I could
really
afford
cool.
one of those.
Let's do it now on Rockline. We're back with Rockline, live and nationwide. I'm Gino Michelini, sitting in for an ailing Bob Coburn this evening with my guests Bono and Adam of U2. To talk to them, call us now at 1-800-222-ROCK. I wish you could have seen these two while we were playing New Year's Day. They're sitting here singing along with you. You guys don't ever get tired of your own songs?
You don't get a chance to listen
to
them.
No, I'll tell you, I was just remembering that line, nothing changes on New Year's Day. In fact, it did, because that was when martial law was lifted in Poland. Yes. Which was a fond memory.
That's actually quite true. It was one of the odd things. I don't think we've ever talked about it publicly before, but 2 months after the record was out, it was announced that martial law was to be lifted in Poland on New Year's Day. It was quite strange.
How did that affect you? Did you feel...
Well, we thought we'd at least got through to the Kremlin one way or another.
Well, let's get through to Miami right now. We've got Christine in the line, listening on K102. Christine, are you there?
Yeah.
Well, U2 is here waiting to hear from you.
Hi, Adam.
Hi.
Hi, Bono.
Christine, you want to talk to me? How wonderful. Maybe you
no,
don't, actually.
I just want
maybe A comes before B in the alphabet.
I just want to say I really admire you both. I think you're just a great band, you know, the best. But I wanted to ask, I read early this year, and I think Rolling Stone, that Bono was appointed to a government committee or something by the Prime Minister, and I just wondered, you know, what that was.
Politics, that's what it is.
Well, yeah. Well, I think I've said before, you know, I don't know that much about politics, but I know a little about people. And this guy, Dr. Gareth Fitzgerald, for Prime Minister, he was pretty good. And I met him in an airport once, and I had a row with him. And I just walked up to him and just pushed past the security guards, and I was just told him I was sick and tired of politicians, and they'd invented their own language to keep everyone else out, you know, and that nobody else knew what they were talking about. And it was high time somebody started talking our language. And he listened, and he wrote to me, and I wrote back. And so in the correspondence, you know, I talked about, you know, unemployment, the people, and, you know, I was lucky. I've got a job. I've got a great job. I've got the best job in the world. But there were some people that grew up in the street that I grew up on that haven't. And I used to mouth off to him about that. And he finally said, well, what you going to do about it? And he said, I'm putting together an emergency committee just to deal with not just unemployment, but there was a lot of bad problems in Dublin City about drugs and heroin in particular. And he put together this committee. So I really had to put myself where my mouth was. And I served on that committee, but I realized that there's another language, not just the language of the politicians, there's another language called committee speak. And I wasn't very good at that either. And they all got up and, Mr. Chairman, this, and can I just speak to the board about that? And I was really just a troublemaker on the committee. And I just have to remind that, you know, if they were talking about young people, they better watch out, because I was one of these people. And so I did. I gave it my best, but I've learned something since. I've learned that, you know, you've got to find your place, wherever that be, whether it's on a factory floor somewhere, or, I don't know, a school teacher or whatever, or just singing in a band. You've got to find what you're best at. And I'm best making music, and that's what I'm going to do in future. I'm not cut out to be a politician. No, thank you.
Did you have a hard time having them listen to you, to pay attention to what you had to say?
No, Bono's got a very loud voice.
Yeah, I raise the voice. If in doubt, shout. That's an old Irish proverb.
Christine, did we answer your question for you?
Yeah, and are you
going to
come to Miami?
Yeah, well, you know, we sneak off to Miami all the time, but we just don't play there. We like it so much. And it's been, you know, on our second LP, October, was in Florida. A lot of people who felt that record was too progressive and didn't play it. In Miami they did, and in Florida they did, and I'd love to be able to pay that back. And I hope that we can in the future play Miami. I'm sure we will.
Christine, we've got...
Thanks a lot, Christine.
We've got to move on. We've got another caller on the line here from San Antonio, listening on KISS. James, are you there?
Yes, I am.
James, you have to speak up.
Yes, I am.
Okie dokie.
Hey, Bono. Hey, Adam. How's it going?
Hi, how are you?
Oh, just fine. I'd just like to ask you how you got involved with the Band-Aid Project, and what was it like working with the other great musicians like Sting and Phil Collins and Paul Young and all those other guys?
Well, I'll tell you, we were in the middle of an English tour, and this guy from Dublin called Bob Geldof kept trying to ring us, and, well, tried to ring Bono, in fact. And, you know, on tour, you get a lot of calls that you're not sure about. So for a long time, his calls weren't answered. So he eventually got through to us and said what his plan was. And, you know, the natural reaction was obviously, yeah, of course we're going to help. And we didn't know how it was going to fit in with the way the tour was scheduled, but fortunately there was a day that we could make it to the studio and turn up and be there with everyone, and that's exactly what we did. I mean, it was a bit of a crazy day. It was very strange for everyone to turn out and bury the hatchet and just, you know, all put their shoulders to the winch, so to speak. And I think that in itself is an achievement. But the record that came out of it is remarkable, and if it will help those people, I don't think it'll solve their problem, but I think it will help. I think that's all anyone can ask for.
Well, the most important thing about the Band-Aid Project is that it's more than just hard cash, it's music, you know? And that's what I felt good about, you know? It wasn't just a cash, it wasn't just a guilt offering, it was a great song. So I was pleased to be involved in it.
How many people were in the studio at once?
I don't know. There was a hell of a lot of pop stars. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I felt a little out of place with, you know, there. But it was kind of encouraging to find there were others that felt out of place. And people just put aside their own musical taste. Because there's a lot of people there which had nothing in common. And except that they were involved in music and they wanted to do something. I mean, everybody sees the news, you know, everyone listens to the radio, you hear about it and you say, what can I do? I can do nothing. But what you can do is find somebody who knows what to do. And Bob Geldof was such a man. And he decided he'd get out there and do something about it. And I tip my hat to him and Midyear, who wrote the music. And I haven't heard the record. I'm hoping that maybe we can play it later on. Would that be possible?
Yes, we're going to play it before the show is out tonight.
Because I haven't actually heard it. I've just heard, you know, a cassette copy.
Yeah, we're definitely going to play it. James, thank you for your call. And we've got lots of more music and conversation with you, too. And your calls, we're waiting for them.
Thanks a lot, James.
If you want to talk to Adam or Bono, just call us at 1-800-222-ROCK. It's toll-free, and we'll continue in a moment on the Global Satellite Network on Rockline. We're back with Rockline, live and nationwide. I'm Gino Michelini, sitting in for Bob Coburn with my guests, Bono and Adam of U2. To talk to them, all you have to do is call us now at 1-800-222-ROCK. And we'll be taking calls a little bit later on. Right now, let's get to something off of the new album, the Unforgettable Fire album. It's a great record. And this is Wire on Rockline. To be a good rock and roller, you got to know how to do that. You got to know how to grunt, right?
I think you do it better than us, dude.
We're back with Rockline, by the way, live and nationwide. I'm Gino Michelini. I'm sitting in for Bob Coburn, who is not well this evening. And my guests are Bono and Adam of U2. And to talk to them, all you have to do is call us right now. The number is 1-800-222-ROCK. And let's go to the phones. We've got Jerry on the line from Atlanta, Georgia, listening on 96 Rock. Jerry, what's your question?
Yeah, I was wondering what the song title Wire meant.
How timely.
Yes.
Gosh.
That's pretty timely. Well, you know, I kind of avoid talking about individual lines of songs or sometimes because I feel that, you know, can mean so many things that it seems like wrong to just keep it just one meaning. But the title for me, The Wire, is for me, it's a sign of subconscious image of the hypodermic needle. And, because two of the songs on the record, on The Unforgettable Fire, were inspired by, just some misuse of drugs that I experienced in my life through friends of mine, the drug heroin in particular, and where I came from, a lot of people were really taken for a long ride over that drug, and it's a very angry song, Wire. And I wasn't even aware as I started to write that song what I was getting into, but that's what it meant to me. That's what that song is about. It's about the heat. It's about the cold turkey. It's about
tightrope.
It's about there's a lot more in there also, but that's what it meant to me, that image.
Jerry, thank you for your call. We're going to move on right now to Tampa, Florida, where we've got Mike listening on 95YNF. Mike, are you there?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to say you guys are great. I love your new approach to rock. Because of it, you can't be compared with any other band I could think of. And I'd like to ask, you got four songs on your new LP that are related to America or Americans. You got the two about Martin Luther King, you got one about Elvis, and you got the 4th of July. I was wondering what was the reason behind that, and if you expected that trend to continue.
You're the reason behind it. I mean, it's coming to America and meeting Americans. It was a real culture shock coming here, and I enjoyed it very much. I enjoyed coming to this continent, because it's not really a country, it's a continent, America. For a long time, for the Irish people, America was the promised land, if you like, the new frontier land. And we came here as a band, and we traveled around, and it changed us, I'm glad to say. Some people say, I hope you don't get changed, you know. Hope you don't change, Bono. Well, I hope I do get changed. I hope I'm changed for the better, enriched by the experience of traveling, and from spending a lot of time here, playing in concert, it was inevitable that it should come out in the work.
I think rock and roll is such an endemic part of America that you can't really. Or America is such an endemic part of rock and roll that it's very difficult to actually write material that avoids Americana in one way or another. It's all part and parcel of it. It was invented here.
Yeah, your country is very rich in its rock and roll heritage, if you like. There's so much there. I mean, Elvis Presley, he was the beginning of it all. But even before there, the roots of rock and roll were in gospel. Aretha Franklin, you know, I grew up on American music, Bob Dylan's music. And the bands I listened to, like The Who and The Beatles, that came from England, they came over here. They wanted to be here. And you're right, it's just what Adam said. It's part of America. And it infiltrated the music. Quite without us wanting to, it just did, and that's, I suppose, the best way of answering that question.
Have you noticed any change in your fans back home as a result of making it over here?
Yeah, they all want to move over here. Like, no, I mean, I see there as being two American and two Americas. There's one which I spell with a K-A, America. I'm not sure I like that, because that's the America of Ronald Reagan, that's the America of the gunslinger, that's the America of too many commercials, that's the America of, let's just have rock and roll, a cheap pop song for cheap thrills. But I believe in the other America. I don't know, it's a more of a dreamland place, it's an open space, and people are open people, audiences that are just so open to us, and open to our music. A great land that one night when I look out the window of the bus, you know, there's the Rocky Mountains. Another night I look out and it's New York City or Los Angeles. So much here. And so I see there as being two. And I'm always fighting with them, the two of them. And it's usually the dreamland, the optimistic America usually wins out.
Let's move on to another place in this land. Tina is listening in New York. She's on WOUR 96.9 in Utica. Tina, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's your question?
Hi, Bono.
Hello.
Hello, Adam.
Hi, how are you, Tina?
I'm fine. My question is concerning your relationship with Bob Dylan. I saw you a year ago
that sounds
in New York doing a rendition of Knocking at Heaven's Door with The Alarm.
Oh, that's right.
And in Dublin, after that, I saw you perform with them on stage.
Yeah.
And now I'm hearing that you're going to be doing, writing some sleeve notes for him, for his new LP.
Well, you're nearly right there in all counts, and I don't know, I don't feel qualified to talk about Bob Dylan because I'm such a fan, you know, and I was, I was pleased to have the privilege to sing with him on stage. I sang two songs, Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat and Blowing in the Wind, and I really believe that Bob Dylan still has a lot to say and like to hear a lot more of his records on the radio. As far as the sleeve notes are concerned, that's actually not true. There was talk of it at one point. I don't know what to say when it comes to Bob Dylan. I have all his records, and I just don't feel that I can be on the, you know, people should talk about me and him like as buddies, because I just don't feel like that. He acted like that. He acts like anyone should act. He doesn't act in any way other than a human being who has worked hard in his life and sang songs and traveled should act. And I found him a very funny man as well. He's, you know, sometimes billed as, you know, Bob Dylan, you know, poet or prophet, but I found him a very funny man. He made me laugh. And I like singing Knocking on Heaven's Door. I think it's a classic. And we may sing some more of his songs in the past. Just got to learn to play the guitar a little better. He knows some good chords, that man.
Tina, thank you for your question. We're on Rockline with you, too. If you want to talk to them, call us at 1-800-222-ROCK. And right now we are going to rock live with you, too. Here's I Will Follow on Rockline. Two live from under a blood red sky. Blood red sun, isn't it? You guys can,
right the first time, I'm afraid.
Oh,
you know?
Sorry about that. You guys can be live. If you've never seen this band, you're missing something. They are a great live band, and there's plenty of time left to talk with Bono and Adam of U2. If you want to call us toll free, the number is 1-800-222-ROCK. It's Rockline on the Global Satellite Network. Back with Rockline, live and nationwide. I'm Gino Michelini, sitting in for Bob Coburn with my guests, Bono and Adam of U2. To talk to them, just call us now at 1-800-222-ROCK. We're getting some great calls tonight. Let's go to one of them right now. As a matter of fact, back to Indiana. We've got John listening on WMET 95.5 in Chicago. John, are you there?
Yeah.
What's your question?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hello, John. Fine. Yeah.
I'd like to say you guys are certainly one of the best new wave bands around.
Hey, we're not a new wave band. Yeah. I mean, I just what you say there, John, always really bug me, no offense or anything, when people call us a new wave band. It always bugged me when people call us a punk band. It always bugged me when people called us anything other than U2. I just feel that, you know, all those descriptions don't work. But I'm still glad that you're into us anyway.
It has a funny way of trying to justify itself, which I don't think it needs to.
Anyway.
Just say we're U2. Don't say we're new wave.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so my question is, did your producer Brian Enos approach you guys first about adding keyboards to the Unforgettable Fire LP, or was that already set in U2's plans?
No, he just wanted to play on the record. No, I think the time for U2 to move on and discover new inspiration, and instruments are very much the thing that you need to fire off if you're a musician. Brian was obviously someone who knew about keyboards and keyboard treatments, and they were integrated into the sound of the band. Previously, a lot of the things that we did with keyboards on this record had been done with guitar or bass or drum or vocal treatments in the past, so it was perhaps just an easier way of adding texture.
Why, do you respond to the sound of a keyboard, or do you dislike keyboards? John?
Yeah, I listen to them a lot, yeah. I don't play keyboards.